Welcome to Go For Side Effects. I'm your host, Kevin Simon. You all know my co-host, John. John, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks.
All right. So today we got a special guest, Venus Tower, Army veteran. How are you doing today?
I'm semi-operational.
I think that's about 98% of us, I would say.
Well, statistics say that one-third of the 600,000 that deployed in Desert Shield, Storm, and Saber operations are ill today. So I'm in that one-third that's ill today. And any day that I can get out of bed, it's a good day.
Well, you know, I haven't found it. I saw that same statistic that says one-third, but I don't believe that.
You believe there's more?
Oh, yeah. I believe it's, it's 75% to 80%. That's what I would say. And I believe it will end up becoming a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. And I think that statistic was done a long time ago.
Yes, that statistic was created in 1999.
Oh yeah. That's about right. And as we got older, but it was funny because I also learned that they've been watching at least 540 vets over the last, 10, 20 years.
You're talking about the Kansas study.
Yes. And so go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about yourself, when you were in, where you were at, and what you did.
All right.
Is she over to leave? Here. She can't drive.
In beginning of 1990, before SHIELD, the military lawyers had an idea that we might be doing some more military training in the Middle East. And when they do that, you always have some paperwork. And the lawyers were first people deployed at that period of time. And at that time, I had been a paralegal for about a year. But I had two lawyers that I supported. At that time, they were a lieutenant colonel and a major. And they were going to the embassy. And when they went, I left my assignment in the Boston area, and we went to Saudi Arabia first. But Intel had told us that we would be moving elsewhere in the Middle East. We knew of Iraq at that time, but no one was saying anything about Kuwait. So I had been in service 16 years. And I got there because my father was a World War II vet, Red Ball Express. And I had graduated high school. And that summer after graduating high school, I got hit by a bus.
Oh.
And the result of that, luckily it wasn't moving very fast, but the curb hit my throat. And I damaged my vocal cords. And I could only speak at a whisper. Now, the problem with that was, at that time, from age 9 on until 17 and a half, I had been an opera singer. And I was in chorus in New York City. I was never going to be out there as a single a solo performance, but I loved being in the chorus. So after having that injury, I was in depression, and my father said, we're going to find something for you to do. And because I hadn't reached my 18th birthday, he signed me into the United States Army. And that's how I ended in military service. At that time, it was the Women's Army Corps. So when I went to basic training, they said, here's a picture of an M14. Don't worry, you don't have to use it. And now we're going to our makeup class. Okay. So I did that. My first job skill, MOS, was combat photography. So I learned, you know, we were still doing film processing. We were doing aerial photography. And I got swept up with recruiting support and making films and photos that recruiters would use to join the people who joined the Army was my theme at that time. So how did I get to become a paralegal? Well, wasn't directly straight. From there, my first assignment after merging into the all Army force was to Vietnam. And at that time, thank goodness, computers weren't quite as effective. We were still using punch cards at that time. So I'm seeing Vietnam on the TV every night. You don't need another combat photography. So I did something they said was unusual, can't be done. I wrote the entire chain of command because they taught me how to type also. So from White House to my senators, to my state legislators, through First Army Corps, to TRADOC, to my base, to my battalion, to my first sergeant. You heard, you did not need another combat photographer. So I got as far as Guam, and my last stop was supposed to be Nam. And when I went to transfer aircraft at that point, somebody said my name and said, we have a reassignment. Well, I didn't take that too well. Fell on the ground and cried and said, I'm glad I'm not going there. And after I got on the next aircraft coming back to the States, this is when I found out what my new job was going to be. So I became a medic, combat medic. So I went through school at Fort Sam, and I really did enjoy it. And I did that for a couple of years. And at that time, they had a lot of correspondence courses. Well, some people would go to the movies, but I liked doing correspondence courses. So I didn't realize that I had completed from medical photography. I ended up being qualified as a laboratory technician. And then I went back to school at Fort Sam as a medical laboratory technician. So I had other assignments around the United States. And being low enlisted, the money wasn't that great at that time. So I would have part-time jobs. So my first part-time job was in Virginia, working ambulance as an EMT. Okay, so as long as I could get back for my duty assignment time, they didn't care what I did. And then a couple years later, I went back to school, and I was doing assignment as environmental regulations, exposures, and I found that fascinating. Why I bring this up, these are the pieces that put me together when I did get involved in Desert Storm. Now, I opened my mouth one day complaining about there's so many laboratory technicians, and I'm going to score to get promoted. Well, I sit at the wrong place at the wrong time because base commander walked up behind me, put his hand on my shoulder and said, we have a job for you. And I was in the middle of a 6-year contract, so there was no way of saying no. And they said, we need paralegals. Okay, I'll be paralegal. That was funny. This was in 1980s, early 80s. And so now I'm leaving Bragg in my class B, because I didn't have the jacket. I had a sweater, the green shirt. At that time, still most ladies were wearing skirts unless they were in a dirty environment. And they put me on a train to go to Great Lakes, Illinois, because the UCMJ is the same no matter what branch of service that you're at. Okay, so I get there, and they look at me and said, "What are you wearing that uniform for?" And I said, "Because I just left my home unit going to the JAG school. We don't have any Army people in this class." I said, "Do you have this Social Security number?" I said, "Yes." "And this name?" "Yes." I said, "That's me. I'm here for school." "Well, why are you wearing that uniform?" "My stuff got stolen." And the girl I was traveling with gave me her uniform. And I couldn't come through the gate in civilian clothes. And they go, "Oh, yeah, that's right." So then I became a petty officer for 9 months, put on the Navy uniform, pretended that I was Navy, finished the JAG course, got my certificate, went back on the train, showed up back at Bragg, and personnel's looking at me saying, at that time, there wasn't that many inter-branch assignments. And I just said the same thing. I said, "Do you have my Social Security number?" Because if they had my Social Security number, I was going to get paid. I did that. And they asked why you're in Navy uniform. Told them same story. Got a new issue of uniforms. Went on. Well, here comes back in February of 90. And I guess I had been paralegal maybe for 2 years. And paralegals do other things than personal justice. They do contract law. They do environmental law. And since I had been studying environmental science outside the military, they put me in an environmental law unit. And the unit was working with the Saudis, talking about, well, what's the possible environmental damage if we are involved in a conflict in the Middle East? And, well, we were thinking about the usual things, you know, landmines and munitions, but no one was talking about NBC. Okay. Then in August, I went from Saudi Arabia to a legal unit in Kuwait. And my assignment technically was to do contract law, because American military was getting materials from the French, actually, we had someone from Japan that was. So we had to, all this material that we didn't have that we wanted to make deal from our coalition countries, someone had to do the paperwork. And that was my job. My lawyer would say, this is what we're doing here, write out the form. Okay, so it wasn't that I stood in the office, because I would have to take documents out forward to infantry units, Patriot units, for their commanders to sign. You're getting this material, you're getting this type of support. And there was only two other females in my detachment, so we were going different directions. And most of the time, I traveled alone. And that was...
So Venice, you're, at this point, correct me if I'm wrong, you're in the Navy and you're in Kuwait.
No.
Or no, you went back to the Army somehow. Okay, so I kind of lost you there for a while. So you went from the Army to into the Navy and then back into the Army. And at this point, you're in Kuwait, and you're doing what you do. And yeah, now you're having to travel around to confirm what people have and what they don't have.
But okay. But she says something earlier. They changed one of her jobs when she landed on Guam. Did I hear that correctly? That's where I was stationed. I just, I had to bring that up because I was like, oh, hell, I was on Guam and everything. So when you went, while you're over in Kuwait, and were y'all like in the area where the oil rigs and all that stuff was going on?
Yes. Yes. And if I didn't have such an independence assignment, I might not have been. I thought most paralegals would stay in a fixed building because we had to send faxes and other communications to the Pentagon. But because of what my lawyers were being used for, they didn't always do environmental law. They did contract law. So my bosses, my senior command is staying at the Kuwait Iraqi border, and I'm going forward. I'm given a map. Here, you take this document to this place, get this signature, and come back. And only half the time, I had a truck. A lot of times, I had a civilian vehicle out there in the sand. I'm going like, if I make the wrong turn off this track here, I'm going to get stuck.
Wait, they didn't have a driver for you? What the heck?
Yeah, I figured you're telling me they're going to send you out in a Humvee and go to where you got to go. And no. You're traveling solo?
I'm traveling solo. I'm in E6, and I'm traveling solo. And that worked for a while until on one of my assignments, I went to 7th Corps Command. And I'm taking some documents to the commander. And after I got the assignments notarized and briefed him as information I was supposed to share, he decided that he wanted to snack on me. So
that was one of the big problems back then. I mean, I was on a podcast last night on the Go For Advocates podcast, and I brought up that. I brought up that, you know, women back in the day, did I just say back in the day? Oh, my God.
Yes, back in the day.
Son of a bitch. Yes. Okay, but women back in the day were treated totally different than what they're treated now in the military.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they,
well,
when you have about five females on board of a ship or five females in an army platoon with a lot more men, it's not a good scenario.
Well, if you don't know how to manipulate it, I was blessed, in my first, after basic AIT, when I was becoming a photographer, I met a command sergeant major, and he wised me up. He says, the wolves are out there. Always have a battle buddy. Be great if you can have a female, but if not, have a male. So that's what I did in most of my assignments. I got somewhere, I tried to find a female to be my battle body. Sometimes I didn't find a female. And then I went and attached myself to the highest commanding officer I could get next to.
That's so a smart idea.
I'm curious, Venice. So while you're at these various local places, because I know about everybody else that we talked, whether they're on land or at sea, In your location, how many times did you have alarms go off saying you were detecting sarin, mustard, what have you? Your M8 alarms. Did they happen here? I'm sure they probably had to probably happen.
Yes, I can report four of them.
See, and when, it's
when,
funny.
When you're around the higher commands, so it was still, it's not like.
Right. You know, here she is with the, I can't believe I say this, the important people compared to us, the grunts, and their alarms are going off. And they came back and they said,
it's an error.
Yes.
So even they were saying that to you in front of your face, blowing it off when they know good and doggone well.
But why am I in a bunker with Schwarzkopf and company?
Right.
I was technically I had many job skills, but most of the time I was a handmaiden. Okay.
But how long
and
were you
I
there?
I was in a bunker one time with them. And then after the alarms had gone off, and they didn't come out the bunker until 4.5 hours later. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was out in the surface, but they didn't come out of their gas-free bunker until 4.5 hours later. Okay. We always had communication, and that's when they felt calm enough to come out.
See, that's what amazes me. Okay, so I'm going to fast forward a little bit to when you first get home. When did you start noticing?
No. Let me tell you when I knew about adverse toxic environment. Because I had been studying adverse toxic environments in the civilian side as a
beforehand
going to environmental okay, and I had been a medic. First thing that set off my radar was the anthrax shots that came from Michigan Biological. Okay, I'd seen a lot of chemistry and medication, and normally anything that the government acquires that's been approved by the FDA has a national stock number. This stuff didn't have the national stock number. It had Michigan Biological ID on it. I didn't want to take it. Hey, sometimes before I deployed Middle East and the military was getting units ready to go to the Middle East. This is actually, I'm in Saudi Arabia, and this is in June. They don't have enough medics, so they grab me as paralegal to give these shots. So I'm looking at all this material that a human being shouldn't have all in one day, okay? But I didn't have the authority to say no. So I loaded that up, and I told people, I said, you know, I don't think your body's going to take it well. And if it doesn't, make notes. Show that to everyone. Because it's definitely 1 out of 3 is going to have an adverse. Just that sucks on the shots. So I ducked the shots. It was supposed to be anthrax, a series of 6. I got 2. First one, I just walked into a room and they were giving shots. And I took it. And then the next time I said, nope, I'm not going to do it. And I found a reason to get out of there. Oh, I have an assignment because I'm working for 006s and 05s. So I said, oh, they're calling me. No, you can't give me the shot now. And the next time that I got my shot was because I had dodged it like 3 or 4 times. So my first sergeant and another E7, they pinned me down in a room, held me against the wall, brought in a nurse, and that's how I got my second anthrax shot.
I mean, they didn't even tell us what we were getting. We just stood in line. We got our shots. And it was funny because there was a lot of guys who got like all their 6 shots and like within one guy within a day.
Right.
And it's crazy. But we're going to be getting short on time. So I want to run a little bit further up because there's a lot more that I want to get to. So when you started coming home, you probably started feeling ill and you knew something was wrong. Kind of talk a little bit about that and get into what you started getting into after that.
I was sick before I returned to America. I had been in the oil well fires. I had been locked out during a Scud attack without my NBC equipment, locked away from it. So I had an exposure. Then after Camisea, I saw which way the winds were blowing during Camisea, and it was over us troops. Because my best buddy was an NBC guy. So I knew what was coming before I left. And my problem was I had gynecological problems on the day I returned home. Now, why I became a Gulf War advocate was because, of course, DOD is telling me it's stress. They did send me to an environmental medicine physician, and which is the only person, next to a toxicologist, that's going to really put these exposures in your system together. And when she got my reading back, she goes, "Are you eating metal?" And I said, "No." Well, I came home with heavy metal poisoning. I put that together. The heavy metals that listed is what makes up sarin nerve agent, which is what was blowing around in Tomasea. Okay, now I have this statement saying I've got heavy metal poisoning. DOD is telling everyone that it's stress, it's minimal. But see, you've got to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. You've got to be doing more than one thing. You had nerve agent pills. You had the dog tags. You had oil well fires. You had going across vehicles that were damaged that had depleted uranium. And as a paralegal, I had some officer tell me, go climb on that equipment, Highway of Death, Taplin Road, and get the VIN numbers off our vehicles that's damaged there. Okay, that's DU.
That's crazy.
So, all this is happening, and I said, this is not right. We are not guinea pigs. I came home and argued with my command. They sent me to the Deployment Health Center at Walter Reed. They're telling me that, yeah, you have multiple chemical sensitivity.
Okay. Hey, wait, hold on. Multiple chemical sensitivity? I actually was told that in 1995 by a doctor who wrote up something, and then were the words that he told me when he was in the office. That's crazy.
Yes. And until this day, Gulf War illness on the VBA, Veterans Benefit side, has not awarded anyone a zero rating for multiple chemical sensitivity.
Okay,
we have their doctors saying it, DOD and VA saying it, but the adjudicators are not awarding. So I wanted to come on the show besides After Effects. Okay, I'm not doing that well. I'm having a good day right now. But my health has gone up and down. And I wanted to document and say thank you for the other veterans who I work with, National Gulf War Resource Center, the Desert Storm Justice Foundation. And you heard of Desert Storm Nurse and Desert Storm Mom. We came together, in Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico report. And all of us had at least 20 people's medical charts saying, we're sick, it's rashes, it's this, it's that, and different problems. And we're going like, how are we getting exposed to this? Well, the Regal report tells us this is the material that the United States sold to Saddam when he was our friend. And during those operations, Shield, Storm, and Saber, our didn't know our assignment was to destroy that material so it wouldn't fall into anybody's hands, but yet not tell the troops that they were being exposed to this material, the quality of anthrax shots. I found out that had been exposed to a biological agent 3 years after I came back to the United States after deployment by the VA, because they were doing a study and they said, where did you get mycoplasma, Burton Tans, incognitus in your system?
They acknowledged you on
they
having
did
this?
It. They did it by accident. See, I came into the study to be a control. And then they said, you can't be a control because you have this in your system.
Oh, man. Wow. I tell you what.
Okay.
So I know we're running low on time. I hope maybe I can come back and talk about the hearings, the organizations that have been working for Gulf War vets, how things have changed. There once was a program, referral centers and stuff. For a hot minute, I was the poster girl for Gulf War illness. I was on the History Channel, Boston Globe. You heard of the IOM, Institute of Medicine. I had spoken before there. And because I was lobbying for the Presidential Special Advisory Committee, which met at the Pentagon monthly, I almost was a victim of the 9/11.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What program? So, Venice, on the History Channel, what program or what? So those of us viewers, do you have the information we can look it up? Because a lot of us, I'm sure, are curious.
And I want to personally thank you for all the work you've done for us.
Yeah, sounds like you've been.
It's really weird because if they would have done a colonoscopy on me 15 years ago, when I first found out, when podcasting was coming out, I really would have had the word out, because, man, that was the day I was pissed. But over time, there's a few things why she's looking up on his. Oh, you got it? Okay, say it.
Okay. Problem is, most of my information that was on the internet, that was on TV, this is like 30-something years ago. It was like at least 28 years ago, because I did this presentation on October 1998. The History Channel did a program called Coming Home, The Veterans Experience in America. It was aired on Sunday, November 8th, 1998. When I go to look for it, they list the title, but they won't show the whole program.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Ain't that
amazing? I appreciate you looking that up. Thank you.
Now, I do want to bring you back on. Venus, would you be able to come back on in exactly 3 weeks from now? I want you to come back on, because I know we're going to talk about risk and everything, because that's one of the topics you definitely want to get in. So
that's talking about the 17th of August?
Yes, on Thursday.
I'm not available.
How about the next week?
Yes, I can do the 24th.
We're going to do the 24th. Write that down, John. The reason we're going to bring her back is she has so much more information that it could take two episodes. Because, I mean, everything I've read that you sent me is just amazing. But for you people that are listening to the show, if you know any Gulf War veterans that have not signed up for the PACT Act, tell them to do it before August the 9th. If you don't do it before the August, I mean, you can still do it after it. But if you do it before August the 9th, it retros back a year. So that's the one thing about it. I found this out last night. When they put the PACT Act and they signed it and they put it together and everything, it retros back all the way to a year from August 9th. By the way, August 9th was the day I went to the military.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. I know y'all all feel bad for me. But in 1989. But so if y'all know anybody who has not signed up for the PACT Act, tell them to sign up. We need to get the word out there. Believe it or not, they really need to retro us back all the way to 1993. Before that, 1991?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, hanging out with legislative body and the veteran in the House and the Senate on how they write these things up, they want to give as little time as possible so they can save money.
Yeah, see, you're...
That's
you're,
why things aren't retroactive.
Right.
Longer.
But we got about 5 minutes, so let's talk about this part. When I filed 15 years ago, well, hold on. When I filed really in 1995 and 1999, why aren't they retroing this all the way back? Because I filed on my digestive system. Back then it was called digestive system disorder. Now it's called IBS. Why didn't they retro that all the way back? That's the part that
because it's the way the lawyers wrote it, and it was written that way to appease the congressmen to assume that they're taking action, but the lawyers were there to save the pocketbook of the VA.
Well, George W. Bush, all them son of a bitches need to get their ass back over in Iraq and clean that shit up. Go over there and be exposed to what we were exposed to. They knew it. They knew what we were exposed to. And you know what? I'll say his name. I don't care. I mean, that's the thing that this is our problem with veterans. We're not connecting to each other. We're still separating. Veterans.
No, the problem, one of the bigger problems is, yes, they knew, because the Regal Report talked about all the different material, NBCDU, endemic diseases. They knew all that at the time. And that report was in Congress in 1993. Okay. So they go, uh-oh. Well, you got the scientists in DOD and intelligence said, how are our troops going to respond to this? And then the other side is, how can we slow down so we don't have to pay for this? And
right.
It's still the same way today.
Unfortunately, it does boil down to money. We all bright enough to understand it boils down to money.
And you know what? In the very beginning, like I said, all I want them to say is, yes, I'm sorry. But none of them will say it because it's an admission of guilt. I mean, anytime an attorney, you get in a car accident, an attorney will say, don't say you're sorry. That's the first thing they tell you. Just don't do this to our children and our grandchildren. Okay.
Yeah, I think too late.
These exposes have taken out my favorite friend, who really did try to support us with Gulf War illness, and that's Schwarzkopf. And that's what the cancer that he had that took him out.
Yeah, yeah, and you're absolutely correct. And please, I'm asking each and every one of y'all to tune back in. In 1 month, she has a whole lot more to say, a whole lot more information that y'all really, I mean, we're talking about somebody who knows the law when you're talking to a redneck and John. And so, I mean, I'm just saying, John, we don't know what she knows.
No, no, I thoroughly appreciate, Venus, everything you're sharing with us, because there's some of us that know some things, but you have firsthand knowledge of it.
Well, she was there before us.
That's what's really intriguing, is you have firsthand knowledge, and you were amongst the higher, you know, the officers, and we already know what happened, but it's nice when we can hear the specifics of what they, I mean, yes, some of our, you know, our commanders, they have passed because of this very thing that they had to defend, because that's what they do. That's their job, because that's what they were told to do, you know, and I get it. You do what you're told to do, period, end of story. That doesn't make it go away.
Well, let me say this for you, Venus. This program is not going to cut anything you set out.
I want you to know
when you did the History Channel, how some of that stuff ain't there. Well, everything's going to be in here. Everything that we do will be in here, but hang on tight after the show. And we will have a little bit of an after the show, because there's a couple of things I'd like to talk to you about. And each and every one of y'all, I want y'all to look this up, because I saw this on Reuters today that, is it Birdall? Birdall, the gentleman who was left his post, went and fought with Taliban. I heard he's getting out of prison.
Oh, really?
Yes. I saw that today. Y'all go look that up, and y'all tell me what y'all think about it. Because I know it came from Reuters, but I just want to make sure it's 100% correct. But if that's the case, that's a bunch of crap. So we're going to go into the after show now. I'm going to thank each and every one of y'all for listening. God bless. Thank you for listening to Gulf War Side Effects. If you have a story or you would like to share or just come on with any comments or questions, please email me at kevinsimon@goldforsideeffects.com.